So here we are again, Porky. Time has come for yet another On The Record podcast, which is doing very, very well. We have to report. Thanks to everybody who's listening to it. Thanks to everybody who's downloading it.
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody who's subscribing to it. And I think if you take the time to spread the word to one person, or maybe two people, you know, we'll get the numbers up even further.
Spread the word.
Spread the word about On The Record.
Word. Yeah, spread the word about On The Record. It's great. We do it with Audioboom.
Yeah, we do. Mm. You know, you tell one person, they tell another person. Before you know who you are, there's another 1,000 people listening to it.
It's called word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth, indeed.
Exactly right. What have you been doing?
Now, well, never mind what I've been doing. I'm going to tell you that in a minute, because I've been at the Cheltenham races and all kind of stuff. Okay. You know, that was...
How'd you get on?
I didn't do well money-wise.
Did you not?
And in fact, then before I left the big race, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, I lost everything.
Did you?
Yeah, so, but that's not worth talking about. What I want to talk to you about is the fact that I think there's been a massive overreaction in this country to the death of a man who, though brilliant and though contributed a lot to science, didn't in fact...
Are you talking about that Russian bloke in Morden?
No, I'm not. No, no. Didn't in fact touch upon the lives of any one particular individual human being...
Who are you talking
unless
about?
You're a scientist. I'm talking about Dr. Stephen Hawking, Professor.
Stephen Hawking was an absolute genius.
Yeah, but he was... He was a genius. What was he a genius at?
Well, he was a genius at physics, apart from anything else, right?
Yeah.
Astrophysics
as
well.
So how did he change your life?
Well, he changed my life because he brought a book out called A Brief History of Time.
Yes, that's right. He read it, have you?
Which almost everybody has bought a copy of, right? Yeah. Which has brought physics into everybody's home, which has made countless children interested, in science, which has made loads of children want to be Stephen Hawking because of all the interesting things that he says and does. Yeah. And he was a very funny man. He appeared in all sorts of things, like The Simpsons.
Yes.
He appeared in Monty Python sketches.
Yes.
He appeared in The Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
You know, he was a man who inspired many others. That's what I would say about it. Well, how can you possibly say that he's you know, been oversold?
No, he's been oversold because even he said that a lot of people who bought his book, A Brief History of Time, which made him millions, quite rightly so.
16 million copies, I think he said.
Yeah, that's right. Hardly anybody's ever read it.
No, that's probably true.
And hardly anybody's...
Well, did you buy it?
No, of course I didn't
buy
it.
Why didn't you buy it?
I'm not interested in the history of time. I couldn't care less.
Why not?
And when
Have you seen the history of time?
Yeah, when you've seen the time, And when he said, well, I've got new theories on black holes, nobody knows what a black hole is
anyway. No, I know, but people are fascinated by it.
No, they're not fascinated.
I mean, how many times have you and I spoken on the radio about space? About going off to see Mars, going off on a moon mission.
It's all a load of bollocks because we're never going to get to Mars.
That's not true.
We're never going to get to Mars.
That is not true.
If we went to the nearest planet, which could have lifeling Earth on it, you know, or vegetation or something like that, it would take something like 40 light years to get there.
It doesn't matter.
So it doesn't. It's never going to happen.
I said this to you before. If you don't wonder what is out there, then you are forever destined to be staring at your own belly button.
That was old. Professor Stevens' view, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Don't look at your feet, look up in the sky and be curious.
Yeah, well, it's
well,
like
I'm
the
curious, but I'm curious also about what's below the oceans.
Not bi-curious.
You know, I'm curious what's below the oceans, but I don't know anything about the oceans because I'm not a marine biologist.
No,
and I'm
not
a physicist.
Well, that's why if you want to fucking find out something about what's going on at the bottom of the ocean, you talk to marine biologists and they tell you.
In my mind, much
in your
more
mind,
relevant.
You're a legend.
Yeah, well, that's a different story. In my mind, much more relevant death during the period... A much more relevant death during the period of mourning for Professor Stephen Hawking was the death of one of the great comics of my era...
Ken Dodd.
Jim Bowen.
I thought you were going to say Ken Dodd.
Jim Bowen.
Why did you say Ken Dodd?
I'll come on to Ken Dodd in a minute.
I don't really know Jim Bowen.
Well, Jim Bowen was the bullseye guy.
Yeah, I know who he was.
Smashing Great Super and all
that,
right?
Yeah, but his kind of period of fame was when I was living in America.
Yeah, okay. Well, he was a Northern Circuit comedian.
Well, that's the other reason I don't...
Northern Working Men's Club.
That's the other reason I don't think much
of... I think he was a director of Fleetwood Town, the football club and all that. But, I mean, this man...
Was he still a director of Fleetwood until the day he died?
Yeah, I'm sure he was, or some football club. I think it was Fleetwood.
Okay.
But this man touched the lives of millions of people. People would sit down on a Sunday evening and put on Bully, Bullseye.
What was the point of Bullseye?
Well, Bullseye was a celebrity and comical view of darts and, you know, you saw darts.
Did you have like professional
board.
Darts on...
Yeah, you had
darts
a professional
players.
Darts player, and then you had two.
How can
punters
you make a whole show out of that?
Well, it was great. You know, it gave everybody a great feeling because, of course, darts is something that we all played as schoolboys.
No, I didn't play darts.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Of course we did.
No, I did not.
I did. I spent a lot of time playing darts.
You claimed that you're a great darts player, but you claimed that about everything you do.
I once beat the News of the World champion Museum when I was at the University of the Trent in a pub called the 19th and 21st Lancers.
But now, I've also seen, because actually somebody put it out, and you know what they did? They were very clever. They took a piece of audio from something you said on the radio.
Oh, yes.
And they put it to the, they overdubbed it onto the piece of film of you at the Ali Pally playing darts with Richard Lewis from the Daily Express.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And the way you described it on the radio was completely different from the way that it played out on the TV.
Oh, really?
Because unfortunately for you, you talked about how you smashed him into the ground, you beat him with this incredible sort of three triumvirate of darts,
That's right.
When in fact the first dart missed the board altogether.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
No, I've never missed the board.
Yes, it did.
I've never missed the board.
It's there.
But anyway, look, you're getting away from the subject here.
No.
You are one of the masses who, Professor Stephen Hawking died. Oh, what a shame. But he didn't touch on our lives.
I'm not
knocking the guy. He's a great guy, right? Yeah. He was a brilliant scientist.
He's a great guy. He started sounding even more like Donald Trump now.
He's a great guy. He also spent 50 years in a wheelchair because he got motor neurone disease.
And he survived beyond all the odds that people said that he wouldn't.
And I have immense respect for him. Immense time, I do. But what I'm saying is, everybody's got carried away. Professor Stephen Hawking's gone. The world will end.
Well, no.
He did not affect your day-to-day life.
Unlike
Jim Bowen did. To the point.
No, Jim Bowen did not affect my daily life.
He affected my daily life.
I was not particularly... Well, he affected your daily life. See, this is what you are all about. Yeah. Just because it fucking affects you doesn't mean it affects everybody else.
Well, how did Professor Stephen Hawking affect your daily life, then?
Well, because he was a genius and he was a man that I thought about on a regular basis.
Did you get up every morning and think, oh, look, there's a fucking star in the sky.
No.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
No.
I'll ring up Professor Stephen Hawking and say, hey, Sir Hawkey, what's that star, man?
Sir Hawkey?
Yeah.
That's not what I call it. I'll tell you why I wouldn't do that, okay? Because when I wake up in the morning, there aren't any stars in the fucking sky because it's daylight, okay?
But
if you listen to Stephen Hawking more, you might know that.
I get up so early, man, 4:30 in the morning, there's always stars in the sky.
No,
so
that's usually when
he's
trying to find
your
way home, isn't it?
Let's move on to the other great person who died,
Ken Todd. Moped muggers lately?
The moped muggers, they're under investigation by the cops.
Right, okay, just
now, checking. So Ken Dodd...
I mean, that was the three, wasn't it? It was Stephen Hawking, Ken Dodd,
absolutely.
And Jim Bowen. They do what's coming through.
Ken Dodd was a brilliant man. 90 years of age when he finished. He was in hospital with some sort of pneumonia for 3 weeks and then died. Married his girlfriend of 40 years, 2 days before he died.
Yep.
So once again cheated the taxman.
Yeah.
Not suggesting he cheated the taxman the first time round because he was found innocent in court.
Luckily, well,
cheating the taxman, so he didn't cheat the taxman, obviously.
The taxman, well, at least what he didn't do.
Was to
do anything that you might be caused to libel him about because of course now that he's dead you can say anything you like.
Well, yes, but I wouldn't say anything bad about
Ken.
But
the trouble with you is right, whenever anybody dies you slag him off.
No, I don't.
You take great delight.
Am I slagging off Ken Dodd?
Well,
I'm not.
Well, you just said he cheated the taxman.
I use that as an expression because he married his girlfriend before he died. Now, do you know he actually was born and brought up in Knotty Ash? Knotty Ash wasn't a mystical place.
It was only relatively recently that I found out that Knotty Ash was a real place.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just assumed he'd made it up.
I know. When we used to go to Everton, there was a sign that
says
Knotty Ash. We are the
Naughty Men. Naughty Men.
That was the Diddy Men.
The Diddy Men.
We are the Diddy Men. That's right. Yeah. And all that kind of stuff.
Did you ever see his show? Did you ever see his show?
No, but I saw his shows on telly. I mean, I've never been to a live Ken Dodd show.
No, but apparently it's live shows.
But they go on for 4 hours.
4 or 5 hours.
How long do our shows last on stage? An hour and a quarter?
Yeah, no, usually about an hour and three quarters.
An hour and three quarters.
With a bit of a stop in the middle.
Well, so double that. And that's
couple of hours.
And that's what Ken Dodd was doing in his 80s.
Imagine if we did a four-hour show.
Yeah. The theatre would be empty.
It would be,
So what I'm saying is, I mean, it was quite remarkable the way this man did it, and he brought sheer joy and pleasure to people's lives.
Yes.
So
now I would say, for example, that you know, with no disrespect to Jim Bowen, just because I wasn't really part of his thing.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't really do anything for me. Ken Dodd, who I didn't find particularly funny, was part of my childhood.
Yes.
So I would like to say that he affected my life in a good way.
Yes.
I mean, there was a lot of people telling Ken Dodd jokes.
Yeah, that's right.
During the week that he died.
Yeah.
And my favourite one, and I can't say I listened to a lot of them.
Yes.
But my favourite one was, you know, I started reading a book about Stockholm Syndrome. I didn't like it much at the start, but by the time I got to the end of it, it was really good.
That's right, and he loads of those like that, and he used to tell them, just rattle them off his tongue. Now, listen to this, okay?
Yeah, go on.
Tears for souvenirs was all you left.
This is the song that was the second biggest selling song in the 60s, right?
It was the second biggest selling song today. It was number one. And guess what? I first heard it when my old fella came home one day, you know, after being at work.
Oh, yeah.
And walked in, and we had a gramophone, right? Uh-huh. So we opened the lid of this fantastic chest-like thing.
Yeah,
you know,
was it on those kind of V-shaped legs?
Yeah, that's right, that sort of thing. And it was a polished chest and all that, and then there was a turntable.
I like a polished chest.
That's right, yeah. And he puts it on, and the thing goes round and whirs,
it's
and then
single,
the arm lifts
45.
Up. It's a single 45, yeah. And then it drops, and then this terrible noise. Tears for souvenirs.
Ken could not sing.
Well, he's got number one.
No,
number
I know,
one
but he couldn't sing.
So I said to my old fellow, I said, what's that then? He said, it's Ken Dodd. He said, fantastic, you know. And I said, oh, I said, it's the first time I've ever seen you buy a record. He said, I didn't buy the record. He said, I swapped it for an Addis brush because my dad used to sell Addis brushes.
Did he? And he used to... so he gave it to some poor housewife.
No,
gave her an Addis brush and got the old got the record in return.
No. What would have been is it would have been he'd been in a shop somewhere. Like they used to sell to shops.
Oh, he didn't sell door to door.
No, he didn't sell door to door. He used to go shops and stock shops up, and then you know the guy who was the main man at the store would say, "Give us a free brush, and I'll give you a Ken Dodd record or
did
something like that."
He was driving around with a load of brushes in the back of his car then.
He had these two big black cases, right? Made of like.
It sounds like a door-to-door sale.
Oh, honestly, they were dreadful. These big black cases.
Yeah.
They're made of like hard plastic.
Yeah.
And they were full of brushes. Addis was famous for making brushes.
Well, Richard Addis, who was the editor of the Express, that was his family.
Was he part of the family?
Yeah, that was where the money came from.
Good God. Brushes, things that you sweep the rubbish into on your carpet.
Yeah.
You know, what's that called?
What, like Hoover?
No, not the thing you sweep it into, the hand one, you know, like.
What do you mean?
Well, you know,
well,
you
the dustpan and brush.
Dustpan and brush. That's right. Dustpan and brush.
You wouldn't have really been very good at selling.
And do you know
stuff,
what? I used to be very unpopular as a kid when we were about five or six.
Well, guess what? You're still fucking unpopular.
Yeah, that's very nice, isn't it? Because what used to happen was right. You used to go to kids' parties, and then you're always supposed to take the other kid a present.
Yeah.
So you know, like.
So what did you not do then?
Well, what my dad used to do was he used to give us instead of giving us like a toy fire engine. This is when we were about 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he'd give us a bath brush to give to some kid aged five or six, wrapped up in paper and everything.
Well, what did they do when I opened it?
Well, you'd never seen such disappointment on a kid's face.
Right.
Ripping open this present, thinking, oh, this is good. You know, what's it, some Dominoes or something? No, it's a bath brush.
Why would you mistake a packet of Dominoes for a bath brush?
Well, same sort of shape, I suppose.
What?
Same sort of shape.
Well, it's not,
but
is it?
Look.
No, you're like a toilet brush you're talking about.
No, a bath brush you'd scrub your bath with
in
the bath.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I know, it's absolutely
did you ever have anybody come to your house for a party?
Oh, yeah.
And what did they bring?
Proper presents.
Really?
You know, we got proper presents. Yeah, they
that's
didn't get anything.
Shocking, that.
But it was a bit shocking. But anyway, look, I thought I should just make the point that I am not knocking Professor Stephen Hawking.
Well,
brilliant
you're not being
man.
Very respectful
well,
to
no,
a man
all I'm saying
who's
is,
left a massive legacy.
You know, it's trendy to get on board the, oh, I'm wailing and mourning for the death
excuse
of
me.
Professor
well,
Hawking.
Well, hang on, if you're accusing me...
Well, nobody
me,
ever met him or knew him.
No, but if you're accusing me of wailing and moaning,
that's
not the way I behave. I treat people who die with respect.
Yes.
He wasn't a family member of mine.
Yeah.
He wasn't a close friend of mine.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to pretend that he's affected my life massively
by
dying. However... By living, he's done some wonderful things.
Jim
I think you should salute him.
Jim Bowen came from dirt poor poverty, or
where
most
did he come
of the
from?
In the northwest of England. He came from
outside
Manchester, Fleetwood around there, and that kind of stuff. You know, the Fylde Coast
that. That's up by Blackpool.
That's
isn't
right.
In Manchester.
That's right. Well, it's northwest. It was Lancashire in those days.
Well,
you
say that it's just northwest, but people get very upset with the way that you're kind of
loose-lipped
about certain specific places.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is, is that. He affected his life. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He stood up on a stage and let people heckle and shout at him, throw beer at him. And he stood there and did it all.
Mm.
Professor Stephen Hawking never had to do that.
But he couldn't.
But he was born with a genius brain.
No, I know, but
before he became ill.
But he suffered terribly in the sense that, you know, he had operation after operation
operation. Shocking.
He thought about trying to commit suicide a couple of times.
Yes.
You know, just think about that kind of life before you slag him off and say that he's done nothing for anybody.
Mm. Yeah. No, I didn't say that. What I said was he may have done a lot for the scientific lobby, but if he has, it's whoosh way above our heads.
No, but the point is he made it mainstream. He brought science into the sort of general... Well, have you not seen The Theory of Everything?
All right, you tell me this then.
Have you seen The Theory of Everything?
Tell me your favourite chapter and your favourite paragraph from The Brief History of Time.
I haven't got one.
Well, you told me it was the most important book that anybody's ever read.
But it was the most important book, not because of the way that it was read, but because of the fact that it was written. That's my point. You see, once again, you have to think about what I'm saying. I'm not telling you it's the greatest book ever written because I haven't read it.
What bloody good is a book that's been written that a lot of people bore but nobody's read?
Well, the whole point...
I mean, that's like Mein Kampf.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
You don't know how many people bought that. Why would you bring Hitler into this fucking conversation? What's wrong with you?
Well, because everybody in Germany in those days said, I have my copy of Mein Kampf. jump.
Oh, you know that for a fact,
yeah. But nobody read it, of course.
No. Listen to what
Van
I'm saying.
Van Banner didn't read it, because obviously it was an evil book, very evil book.
The fact that Stephen Hawking's life is made into a film, means that he had a massive effect on modern culture, okay? Popular culture knows who... Yeah. If you ask anybody in the street who's Stephen Hawking, they all know who he is, right? Yeah. If you ask him who Jim Bowen is, they've got a fucking clue.
Yeah, but if you ask anybody, say, could you please repeat to me the first four lines of A Brief History of Time, nobody would know.
Well, it doesn't matter.
I mean, it's
That's
like...
That's not the issue.
It's like all these, you know, tossers who
I
go
mean,
on
people
about...
people just think if you walk down the street today, could recite the first four lines of fucking Rooney Tunes.
No,
what are you talking about?
You mean my best-selling book?
Shit book that Mike Parry wrote.
Hey, don't talk about my book like that. Right?
Anyway, that's enough about your book. At least Stephen Hawking's book actually sold a few copies.
Yes.
Or a few million copies.
Yes, well, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you've talked enough about that. Now, listen.
Yeah, go on.
Did you know that, talking about, unfortunately, the death of these people that we've been talking about... No, unfortunately. Talking about the death of Stephen Hawking, of Ken Dodd, of Jim Bowie.
Yes.
Do you know that we're running out of graveyard land?
Graveyard land.
People should not be expected to be buried in their local churchyards anymore because space is running out.
I don't want to be buried anyway.
And the place, believe it or not, where it's most happening is in Wales.
Wales?
Yeah, no,
you've
I don't
loads of room in Wales.
Well, exactly. I thought, well, you know, you could bury them on
maybe,
the Brecon Beacons or something like that.
Yeah, but I think you have to have the land. Does the land not have to be, like, consecrated if you're going to do it from, like, a church point of view?
Get a vicar to go around spraying a bit of holy water on the ground.
That.
Of course you can.
No, you can't, because you'd have to approach the owners of the land, first of all.
Yes.
You can't just kind of turn up next to somebody's house and go, excuse me, we're just going to turn this bit of wasteland into a cemetery. Do you mind?
Yeah, it says the Church of Wales said it is struggling to pay for the upkeep of graves because it no longer receives income from burials.
What?
That's strange, isn't it?
Do you know, I heard something about this the other day. There's some kind of a rule whereby if you had what they call a pauper's grave, the family would have that paid for by the state.
I see.
If you couldn't afford to bury some relative of yours, right?
Yes,
I think
yes.
there's a benefit which you used to be able to get,
right?
Which now the Tories have stopped. So,
yes.
So now you're not listening to me, are you?
Yes, I am.
So you now can't. I mean, this won't apply to you, obviously, because you don't need a pauper's anything. But if some member of a far-flung member of your family had no money, right, and they had to be buried, the cost of the burial is picked up by the local authority.
Right.
But
okay.
I think in this day and age of austerity, I think they've said they're not paying for it anymore.
Yeah. Well, you won't get me buried anyway. I'm not going to get buried.
Well,
in case I wake up
do?
In a coffin, that's my terrible greatest fear.
Yeah.
In fact,
your greatest fear was poverty.
Well, that's my greatest fear when I'm alive. My greatest fear dead is waking up in a coffin.
Well, hang on. You won't be dead if you're waking up.
Well,
you?
No. Well, I might as well be. And I've instructed one of my sisters to inject me with poison when they come to see me in hospital after I've died.
Maybe she could have done it the other weekend when you were down in Bournemouth. You know, just cut out the middleman.
After
just go straight for the poison.
After I've died of a fatal heart attack.
Where are you going to get the poison from?
Well, we'll sort that out.
You can get it from one of your mates in Russia, can you?
What?
You can get it from one of your mates in Russia.
No. I mean, that's going to be a terrible problem, isn't it? And at some stage over the next few weeks, we'll have to talk about the possibility of not going to Russia.
Well, I mean, certainly the World Cup is looking a bit iffy.
Yeah, to a certain years,
I mean, poor old Gareth Southgate doesn't really seem to know what to do.
No, he
says
doesn't.
It's got nothing to do with him.
No, that's right.
Well, hang on, mate. You're supposed to be taking the fucking team there.
Yeah,
haven't you got a view of the world?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Absolutely incredible. But, I mean, I don't fancy being buried. I would rather be cremated.
Oh, I want to be cremated because the thing is, when you're cremated, it's... excuse me, it burns you at 1,000 degrees centigrade.
Yeah.
So even if you're still alive, you know, and
you're
in the coffin...
Well, hopefully you
wouldn't be. Well, hopefully you wouldn't be, but just in case you are, I have researched this, and in fact the shock of a 1,000-degree flame hitting your body would kill you instantly of a heart attack anyway.
Now, I can't tell
you... So you wouldn't actually feel like you were being tied to a stake, as they used to in Middle Ages.
Roasted alive.
And set fire to you, which must have been horrible, mustn't it? Must have been absolutely horrible. And you know what they used to do? If they really fucking hated you, right, they would...
I don't know why I'm laughing.
No, I don't either. If they really hated you...
Yeah.
They would tie you to a stake, and then they would spread a lot of brushwood, you know, for about, you know, a circumference of about 12 or 15 feet around you.
Okay.
And that brushwood, right, they light from the outside.
Oh, so you could watch it coming.
Yeah, and it would slowly creep up on you.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you were, roasted alive.
Yeah.
If they didn't really hate you that much, they would... they would put kerosene-soaked straw...
Did they have kerosene in the Middle
Ages? Well, the equivalent of animal fat. Probably animal fat.
They
didn't have kerosene, come to think of it.
They haven't discovered that yet.
That's right, yeah. They would use, like, pig's fat and animal fat, soak the straw in it, and then pack it around your body and then set fire to you, and you went very quickly.
I remember seeing a documentary or a sort of docudrama years ago when I was a kid. Yeah. I think it was about St. Andrew. And he was kind of tied to a stake and crucified or something.
Yeah, was it? But what I thought it was Joan of Arc.
Well, she was as well. Yeah. But, I mean, I think they did it to a lot of people in those days.
Yeah,
but
it wasn't very nice.
Apparently, they put something on his feet, right?
Yeah.
Which might have been animal fat, I don't know. But it wasn't to set fire to him.
Oh.
It was to allow, when they let the dogs out, right, the dogs started to eat him from the feet up. Can you imagine that?
Oh, sorry, was he being burnt as well?
No, I don't know.
Or was he hung from a tree with this stuff and then starving dogs set upon him?
No, he was tied to like a stake.
Right.
I can't remember if there was no fire.
Yes.
But they sort of rubbed stuff on his legs and his feet that the dogs would basically be attracted to.
Wow. Well, and then they let the dogs on him, presumably.
I don't know. Yeah. They let the dogs on him and they basically start eating him from the feet up.
Oh God, that's awful. Because I mean, imagine. I don't want to repeat a story I heard about some Middle East regime.
No.
What they used to do is
put people in a cage.
People in a cage and then tar their genitals with aniseed and then send starving dogs in. I mean, you don't want to talk about that sort of thing. No. Now,
why do you always get onto these horrible torture
stories? Well, let me tell you. You know the Cherokee, the Indian tribe?
Yes.
Those Cherokee are after me.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you can't
wagon.
You can't sum up like 200 years of Native American history by singing some shit song from the 1950s.
No, I'm not.
You know,
no, what I'm trying to...
Give some cultural respect.
No, what I'm trying to say to you is the Cherokee were feared as being the very worst and most barbaric of the Native American tribes.
You've told me about these guys before.
Yeah, well, but I haven't told you the real horror of it. And
we just got away from the horror, I thought.
No. And in fact, American soldiers, the strike legs, as the Native Americans called them, okay?
Yeah.
You know, the Apaches and the Comanches, but more the Cherokee. Yeah. Used to carry one last bullet in their belt, which they would then put in a gun and blow their own head off through their mouth.
Well, if they got caught by
They got caught by the Cherokee.
Yeah, you know, it's very painful to get caught by the Cherokee.
Yeah, that's right. Because what the Cherokee used to do was, he used to hang you from a tree, and they used to set a fire alight below your feet.
Why did you ask me if St. Andrew was hung by a tree?
Well, I thought that might have been the same thing.
Yeah,
they'd get the dogs yapping at him. No. That would be in Scotland, obviously.
I'm not sure, actually.
Patron saint of Scotland, wasn't he?
He was.
And then what happened was, it burned your feet away, which is very, very painful. But the Cherokee was so brutal that when you'd been screaming for about 12 hours, right, they would then cut you down, chop your feet off, because they knew through medical science that would expose all the nerve endings in your leg. They'd then put
I don't think you'd be too worried about that at that point.
You would, because they'd hang you back on the tree, and they set another fire to burn the rest of your legs after they've chopped off your burned feet.
Why are you telling me all
this? Well, I don't know.
I was going to tell you a far more charming story about my father's ashes.
Oh, yes.
Because my father's ashes are partially spread in the garden of my sister's house in Connecticut.
Oh, right.
Where she's also spread the ashes of her cat.
Nice touch.
And the ashes of her ex-husband.
Oh, okay.
They're all under the same bush.
Oh, all right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But she brought the other half of the ashes she brought to Scotland, right?
Right.
And we distributed them in a stream outside of a place called Pitlochry. Which is up to the north, towards the Highlands.
Right.
You know? But what I didn't realise until after we did it, right,
yes,
is you're supposed to get permission. You're supposed to go to the local council and say, do you mind if we, scatter the ashes?
Yeah.
But we didn't do it.
Well, what's it matter? Well, you know, an urn full of ashes just gets swept away by the river.
Well, you would think so, but have there not been cases where football clubs have said to people, you can't distribute any more ashes here because we've already done too many lots?
Yeah, there have been that. I told you West Brom have got their own...
said they had their own graveyard.
It's a yard of remembrance, not a graveyard. They don't bury people there, but you can take your ashes and leave them there.
Okay.
It's a garden of remembrance.
Some people like a tree. You can have a tree planted.
You can have a tree planted, yeah, definitely.
You can
get
one planted in Hyde Park.
Okay,
or maybe Gosport for you.
Well, no, in Gosport, I thought once
somebody probably steal it if you did that.
No, I thought about getting my dad a bench.
A bench?
Because, of course, he sailed from very near there on the D-Day invasions in 1944.
Well, where did you put the bench, then?
Well, you put the bench along the front where the ferries are in Gosport.
There's some people saying there's too many of those now.
Yeah, that's right, they are, and they're ruining historic sites.
They're ruining the seaside.
Well, the local authorities charge a huge amount for them. I mean, crikey, I rang up and found out that's too expensive.
Oh, that's nice. So you wanted to pay tribute to your father, the war hero, and then when they told you it's going to be more than 250 quid, you went, oh, fuck that.
Well, that's a bit harsh.
That's nice.
I'm sure
he's really, really proud of you.
No, it's not like that. It was about the arrangements, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Now, listen, let me tell you, sometimes you go into restaurants, don't you, and you see all the menu on the menu, like all the dishes on the menu.
Yes.
then at the end it says, you know, vegetarian dishes, uh-huh. or it marks one of them with V, doesn't yeah. it? You know.
Now, yes,
guess,
it does.
Guess what they're going to do?
What are they
going to
do?
They're not going to distinguish now between proper meals yeah. that have got meat in them.
What do you mean, proper meals?
Well, meals that have got meat in them, right.
Yeah, non-vegetarian meals.
Non-vegetarian meals, yeah. yeah. And vegetarian meals.
Okay. Well, that's no good for vegetarians, is it?
Well,
it's vegetarians that need the difference of the sign because they can't eat meat.
What they're going to try and do is they're going to try and get people to order vegetarian meals not knowing they're vegetarian, right? And then eating them and then tell them afterwards, you know, you've just eaten a vegetarian
really?
Meal. Yeah.
Okay.
And that will turn people onto vegetarianism. Mm. But you're absolutely right. The other way around, it could be dodgy.
Well, it could be because, I mean,
somebody
how many
suddenly
times...
Somebody discovers, oh, I've eaten sausage meat, you know
well,
what
remember,
I mean?
I think it was Jamie yeah. Oliver who said once that when he was... Yeah. No, maybe Gordon Ramsay. It was one of the two, yeah. I can't remember. But one yeah. of the two of them joked about how they had a table of vegetarians and he didn't tell them yeah. that the gravy that he'd given them was actually made with chicken stock.
Oh, right.
And you can't do that. I mean, that's not fair. That really
yeah.
isn't fair.
Well, yeah,
but
really?
Funnily enough, yeah. only yeah. the other day, in fact, on Mother's Day, yes. I made a Jamie Oliver recipe, which was a vegetarian spag bol.
Oh,
and I kid you not, right? Yeah. The way that it was put together, it was made with lentils.
Yeah.
It tasted exactly like spag bol.
What, the meat?
There was no meat.
No, so where did you get the meat taste from then?
Well, it was just the mixture of the herbs and the spices and the lentils that Jamie Oliver suggested
have liked
that you put together. You would have, if I'd served it to you, you would not have known. You
yeah.
would not have known the difference, honestly.
Right, well, I'll tell you, years ago, right, I went to see my mate Colin Bell, who lived in Claygate.
Is this the one who died?
He drank himself to death, eventually, yeah. in Scotland, yeah. But he had an older brother.
He's had more mentions on this podcast
yeah,
than almost anybody else.
Well, he probably has, yeah. But he had an older brother called Gavin Bell.
Gavin
and
Bell.
And Gavin was a proper journalist. He was the Indian correspondent for The Times.
When you say that, you mean Colin wasn't a proper journalist.
Well, Colin just, I'm afraid, lapsed
drunk,
into drunkenness yeah. and debauchery. And he didn't, you know...
And Gavin worked for who?
The Times. He was the correspondent in India for The Times.
Okay.
So he's a proper guy, you know.
Yeah.
But he was a bit of a sort of, you know, a wacko head, you know what I mean? You know, he was in fact the first vegetarian. Well, I think he it got to him being an Indian, wearing like white cloaks and all that kind of stuff. You know
white
what I mean?
Cloaks.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, it wasn't. Oh, Stonehenge he was working at.
No, I mean, you know, like the Beatles went to see the Maharishi. Well, Gavin got taken over a bit by all this stuff.
Well, I mean,
you can
get very taken in by
Indian
culture.
Oh, yeah, you can. Local culture,
it's
yeah.
It's wonderful.
So anyway, he comes back on a, you know, on a visit and he's staying with Colin.
Yeah.
Because although he had a home in England, he'd rented it out, obviously, because he was posted abroad for 3 or 4 years. Mm. So, he was also a mad runner, you know what I mean? He was always running around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like jogging.
Jogging.
You know? But he had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she was a vegetarian as well.
Was she from India?
She was English, but he'd met her in India.
Uh-huh.
She was an aid worker or something like that, you know. So anyway, they come out and they say, oh, well, you know, got a great plan for today. We'll all go for a 6-mile jog and then we're going to have a barbecue.
Okay.
Oh, okay, that's great. Yeah, love that. Yeah.
See, that's not easy to do if you're a vegetarian.
Well, this is a point. So, so I come back and, you know, start getting wine down my throat in copious amounts, obviously, you know, with Colin. And then I said, oh, the barbecue. Oh, no, it's not that sort of barbecue. Mm. It's an Indian barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. What does that consist of then? They said, spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
I said spaghetti.
Well, barbecue spaghetti.
I don't know. I said, thought that was Italian. Oh no, it's very popular in India. Spaghetti is very popular in India, and everybody eats it over there with sauce. I said, yeah, we do here with meat sauce. Oh no, this is non-meat sauce.
Okay. Well, they do that in a lot of places.
So I said, well, hang on, excuse me. I've just jogged 6 miles with you.
You
I
did
said,
not jog 6 miles.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I didn't jog all the 6 miles, I must admit.
No, I can't.
I stayed
like
in the pub longer.
So you didn't jog 6 miles, actually?
No, I didn't, actually. No.
Thank you.
But there was a room full of people there, all expecting spaghetti bolognese in a bowl.
Well, what's happened to the barbecue?
Well, I couldn't quite work out what the barbecue was all about. And then, they served up the sauce, and it was vegetarian.
Was it sort of tomato-based? Or
as I remember it, it was like leek-based or
leek
something
based.
Like that. Yeah, something like that, you know.
It might have been the same thing that I made with the
So
lentils.
Anyway, I complained bitterly and said, this is a contract. Right. I was intoxicated by this time. I was pissed.
What a great guest.
And I wanted proper food.
Yeah.
So I demanded proper food.
Right.
And that's when they said, we'll get something off the barbecue. I said, no, you've got a barbecue.
Right.
So I went outside and they were barbecuing like pineapple.
Pineapple.
And stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How bizarre.
And I said, where's the hamburgers?
Right.
Where's the sausage dogs?
Right.
So we're not doing those.
Sausage
this is a
dogs.
Yeah.
well, I mean, it's also a very bad idea to go anywhere near a barbecue if you're pissed.
Yeah, I know, Yeah, and they said this is a vegetarian occasion.
Right.
I said it's not. This is Colin's
house,
not
Colin
your house.
Colin Bell, the dipso drunk. What was he doing?
He's not a vegetarian, right? He's just floating around. No, he's not a vegetarian. It was his brother, and he said, "Well, you can do it if you want, you know, and that kind of stuff." Mm. But I mean, I do dislike being taken for a fool by people who tried to push vegetarians on
you. Do you remember the other day we were in that pub and they had vegetarian fish and chips?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't actually vegetarian fish.
What was it made of then?
It was halloumi cheese.
Rubbish.
And basically, the halloumi cheese was in batter, so they made it look like a piece of fish.
Yeah.
But when you cut into it, it's actually a piece of cheese.
Oh, God.
So I don't know how you can call that vegetarian fish and chips.
Say, description's act job, that.
Well, they would have thought so.
Anyway, the reason I told you this is in one of my journals, one of my scientific journals called Appetite. A study has found that having separate vegetarian sections on a menu makes fewer diners choose the dishes. So when the ricotta raviolis and the mushroom risottos were hidden between T-bone steaks and hamburgers, meat eaters were more likely to pick them,
that's probably true.
Thinking it was just in the normal run of options
that
being offered.
That may well be true, but they'll still have to, by law, I suspect, make it clear that it's a vegetarian dish, though, won't they?
Yes.
Because otherwise vegetarians would be ordering the wrong kind of stuff.
Do you know what they do? Mm. They say that they start to describe them not as vegetarian anymore, but as with code words like chef's recommendation.
Right.
So chef's recommendation, if you see that in future, could mean vegetarian, OK?
Yeah, it won't. Rubbish.
Yes,
I guarantee you they'll have to have a little green V there, because otherwise it's illegal. Because you cannot serve meat to somebody who goes into a restaurant expecting a vegetarian dish.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, listen, I don't have a problem with vegetarian dishes, because I quite occasionally would eat a vegetarian dish. I mean, if I have macaroni cheese, does it have meat in it? I don't have it with meat.
They say if you put them all together, it becomes a vegetarian ghetto on the menu. You see what I mean?
Yes, no, I take that point, and I think it's not a bad point to make. But sadly, we're out of time, so we can't explore.
Well, just one more story about that, seriously.
No, we haven't got any time.
Just one. Simon Watch-his-name, who was a writer on The Times, who wrote a lot about sport, but he also writes a countryside column. Oh, and I've forgotten his name.
Really? I don't know who you're talking about.
We were on a facility trip in South Africa. Uh-huh. Went to a restaurant. They had never seen a vegetarian.
They just eat meat all the time.
He asked for a vegetarian dish, and they looked at him like he had three heads.
Yeah.
And then he explained, well, you know, it means a meal without any meat. You know, it's made of vegetables instead. So anyway,
would you like some biltong?
No, they came back, and they had peeled up potatoes, carrots, lentils, and just put on a plate and gave it to him. He was so upset. We were in a booth.
Yeah.
He was outraged. He picked it up, threw it on the floor, stepped on the seat, then on the table, walked across the table and walked out.
Well,
that's the way vegetarians get.
That's a horrible thing to do. This has been On The Record with the Two Mics.
So even if you're still alive, you're in the coffin.
Well, hopefully you wouldn't be.
Well, hopefully you wouldn't be, but just in case you are, I have researched this, and in fact the shock of a 1,000-degree flame hitting your body would kill you instantly of a heart attack anyway.
Now, I can't tell
you. So you wouldn't actually feel like you were being tied to a stake,
well,
as they used to in Middle Ages.
Roasted alive.
And set fire to you, which must have been horrible, mustn't it? Must have been absolutely horrible. And you know what they used to do? If they really fucking hated you, right, they would...
I don't know why I'm laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing.
No, I don't either. If they really hated you, they would tie you to a stake, and then they would spread a lot of brushwood, you know, for about, you know, a circumference of about 12 or 15 feet around you.
Okay.
And that brushwood, right, they light from the outside.
So you could watch it coming.
Yeah, and it would slowly creep up on you.
Yeah,
so, in fact, you were, roasted alive.
Yeah.
If they didn't really hate you that much, they would put kerosene-soaked straw.
Did they have kerosene in the Middle
Ages? Well, the equivalent of animal fat. Probably animal
fat.
No, they didn't have kerosene, come to think of it.
They haven't discovered that yet.
That's right, yeah. They would use, like, pig's fat and animal fat, soak the straw in it, and then pack it around your body, and then set fire to you. The local authorities charge a huge amount for them. I mean, crikey, I rang up and found out that's too expensive. So.
Oh, that's nice. What, so you wanted to pay tribute to your father,
well,
the war hero, and then when they told you it's going to be more than 250 quid, you went, oh, fuck that.
Well, that's a bit harsh.
That's nice.
I'm sure
he's really, really proud of you.
No, it's not like that. It was it was about the arrangements, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I've just jogged 6 miles with you.
You did not jog 6 miles.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I didn't jog all the 6 miles, I must admit.
No, I can't. I stayed in the pub longer.
And
so you didn't jog 6 miles, actually?
No, I didn't, actually. No,
thank you.